views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
The following audio is via a Skype call.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hello, everybody. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour, and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we get together with some of the foremost experts on organizational culture and business trends to help you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I am really excited to have Minda Zetlin here with us to discuss the shifting landscapes of technology, work, and business. So this perspective on our larger societal culture can help us more easily understand how we can create brilliant cultures and what might hold us back from that. So let me introduce Minda. Minda Zetlin is a business and technology writer for Inc.com, who writes the Laid Back Leader column. She's also a speaker and journalist whose work has appeared in publications like Inc. Magazine, New York Magazine, and Computer World. She's the author or co-author of several books, most recently The Geek Gap, which we'll be talking about a little bit about today. And she's also the former president of the American Society of Journalists and Authors and lives in the Seattle, Washington area. So let's welcome Minda Zetlin to Cultural Brilliance. Welcome, Minda.
Well, thank you.
So glad to have you here today.
I'm so glad to be here.
That's great. So I know we're going to talk about a few different things today, all under this heading of the shifting cultural landscape that we're seeing in technology, we're seeing in work and business. And so it's really exciting to be able to have that chat with you. One thing I wanted to start with is looking over some of your bios and your websites. You know, I've noticed you've had a really, really interesting career as a writer. And I was curious, how did you become a columnist at Inc.? How did that come about?
I had been writing for the website as a journalist. My relationship with Inc., the website goes back, I think, a decade. And it probably is sort of relevant to what we're talking about in that I had been doing a sort of very traditional journalistic job there, and I had been learning as much as I've been learning throughout my career about culture and how cultures work, and had written a book about it, and that kind of happened right before I started writing for Inc. and Computer World. It sort of opened some doors, but as is happening throughout journalism and throughout every industry, things were changing very fast. And the format of the website changed. And I had to either leave or adapt to a different way of working that looks a lot at traffic and puts more of the onus on me to create my own success. And so I decided to adapt rather than leave. And it's been great. I wouldn't go back to the format we were working with before if you asked me to. It's just been such a wonderful opportunity to learn stuff, connect with a lot of experts, and basically air my views about everything.
That must be fun to get to air your views about everything.
Well, within limits, but yes.
Within limits, yeah. Have that opening. And why, I know your column's called the Laid Back Leader column. Why that? Why the Laid Back Leader?
Well, because if you were to read my column a lot, you would see that I generally think that as Americans, anyway, we need to be more laid back in our approach to work and our approach to most everything. One of the things that I've written about a few times is the fact that we as Americans, and I have to say that I am super guilty of this year, don't take enough vacations. And that sounds like, if you're an employer, that sounds like it would be a good thing, but it's really a very bad thing because people who don't take enough time off get very bad at their jobs. There's also plenty of research that shows that there's a diminishing rate of returns. If you work longer and longer and longer hours, at some point you're actually accomplishing less than if you worked a reasonable amount of time and then got a reasonable amount of rest. So that in general, it kind of informs my whole philosophy about how work works. That also has to do with cooperation as opposed to competition and whether you lead people best by inspiring and nurturing them as opposed to frightening and disciplining them. So all of that kind of came together for me in the term laid back. And that's why I call the column that.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I'm glad I asked because there's a lot beneath that, right? You know, a lot around, like you said, how do we inspire and nurture people? How do we motivate and engage them, right? How do we help them work reasonable hours where they can be the most productive and most generative
right.
in what they're doing?
Yeah. And there's, I think in Europe, there's some places where it's even illegal to expect people to answer emails after hours and things like that. I think that, I think, you know, maybe we talked about this a little bit when we were talking about this interview, but the lines between work and life are blurring in such interesting ways. And we all have to pay attention to that, especially people who are in leadership roles, and pay attention to how that influences the way people live and not just work, because you know what I mean, for all of us, right? It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah. And so what are you seeing, you know, in terms of we see a lot around boundaries between work and life blurring, right? We see, you know, all the classic signs of it, right? People feeling like they do have to be available 24/7 on email. People feeling like it's hard for them to take a true vacation where they cut themselves off from their email or their phone, their work phone. Now, what are you seeing there around that blurring?
A lot of both good and bad.
Okay.
One of my Inc. colleagues, it's one of the few times I've publicly taken issue with one of my Inc. colleagues. One of my Inc. colleagues wrote a piece where he quoted a woman from a prominent ad agency. I guess I won't name the ad agency for reasons you'll understand in a moment. And she'd written this great thing about combining work and life. And she said, well, it was Thanksgiving and she was cooking Thanksgiving dinner. And she had made some pies, and while the pies were cooling, she had a conference call with some of her employees and one of her clients about some sort of an ad campaign, and she thought that was good. And I jumped in and said, well, wait a second, because, okay, if you want to work on Thanksgiving and it fits your schedule, that may be one thing, but now look at the message you're sending. You're telling your client that you're not setting any boundaries about when you work and when you don't. And more importantly, you're telling your employees that there are no boundaries to when they work and when they don't. Because if you have a conference call with your employees on Thanksgiving, you know, they may not be sitting there watching pies cool. They may have family or whatever gathered. They have to leave that gathering to come be in your conference call. So I jumped in and said, you know, that's bad. that's bad. But Wendy Kaplan, who I want to mention because she's a wonderful executive coach who's responsible for me and Claudette meeting, among other things.
Absolutely.
She's a great company called Vision Quest Consulting and a great book called Your Next Bold Move. Anyhow, she talked when I've done coaching with her and talked about struggling with work-life balance, which is easy to do when you work at home and you know you write late into the night, as I sometimes do. She said, instead of thinking about work-life balance, think about work-life integration, how the two things combine in a way that's smooth for you. And for good or ill, we are seeing that a lot. Work starts at 9, works and ends at 5 is really a thing of the past. And I remember many years ago, like 20 years ago, My boyfriend and I worked in the same company, which is not something I recommend, but it just kind of happened that way. It wasn't that way for very long, but he would say to me, I would stress out about my job way into the night. And he would say to me, think of it as the place took a hit from a bomb at 5 p.m. every evening and it's gone. And I think that 20 years ago, you could think that way. And today it's very, very hard. So a lot of the people I work with, especially at Inc., because that can be such a 24/7 sort of business, do make it a point to not respond to emails and I assume phone calls, although phone calls seem to be a thing of the past kind of after hours and over the weekends, unless something is really urgent. But then again, there's exceptions. For instance, there was an editor. I wrote a piece at 1 a.m. Eastern time the night of the election, and there was an editor waiting to post it. And he was up until 3 and then back to the office at 9. In a circumstance like that, you know, things mm-hmm. happen. So there's a push and pull between when you really focus on work and life goes away for a little while, and when sometimes you need to focus on life and work goes away a little while. Mm-hmm. I kind of had that this summer when I had the confluence of several personal situations all at once, one of which was my husband and I bought a house and we moved. And so there were a couple of months there where work sort of took a backseat. Mm-hmm. You know, I was still doing it, but I wasn't doing it with the same attention and hours that I usually do.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's this opportunity to have work ebb and flow in different ways. Like as Wendy Kaplan, who is a wonderful executive coach and author, as you mentioned, just to give her an extra plug, talks about this life integration, right? So we can have some ebb and flow with when we work more and when we deal with our personal life, we live our personal life, right, more fully. We're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking about this really interesting subject of the shifting landscape of work and what it's like to work in 2017. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. I am so thrilled to be talking to all of you. We have got talk radio for all of us. Are you ready and willing and able to accept all of the abundance you can muster up in your life? Yes! Check us out at drpatshow.com, transformationtalkradio.com, transformationradio.fm.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
There are so many resources out there for meditation, but did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes, that's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Vadili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's ATANAMethod.com, and sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
A word of caution, if you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Sky Siegel co-hosts one of today's most popular psychic shows, Angels and Answers, with Artie Hoffman as she communicates healing messages from the spirit world. These messages can be astounding, enlightening, and life-changing. Born with the God-given talent of inner guidance and the amazing ability to heal, Sky has healed thousands of people. Schedule a reading with Sky now. Call 908-500-1474 and visit skyofangels.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley, and my guest today is Minda Zetlin. For those of you who are just joining us, Minda is a columnist at Inc.com, and we're talking about the shifting landscapes of technology, work, and business in 2017. But before we continue, I want to make sure everyone knows how to contact you, Minda. Do you mind sharing your email or, your website or any contact info so our listeners can get in touch with you if they'd like to?
Absolutely. So an easy way to find me is my website, which is www.mindazetlin.com. So if you know how to spell my name, which is M-I-N-D-A-Z-E-T-L-I-N, you can find me easily. If you go there, what you'll see is a blog that I write called Marriage and Other Adventures, which is began with us moving from Woodstock, New York to the Seattle area. And if you poke around a little bit on the left side, you'll see an about. And if you follow that, you can find links to my Inc. columns and also my email address and all that good stuff.
Great. Thank you. Thanks so much. Definitely. And I've enjoyed, so all the listeners, I really enjoyed reading Minda's columns and taking a look at things that she's done. So definitely well worth a look. So we were, before we took the break, we were talking about how work and life are blurring, right? How that landscape has been shifting. And one of the things that I know, Minda, you and I have talked about in the past is this question of, do I want to be successful or do I want to be happy? And is it possible for me to be both, right, at work? I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I think if you're not both, you should change something because... Mm-hmm. I take that back to say that there are people, this is not how my brain works, but I have known many people who are happy doing a job. I guess they are successful, but they're not necessarily climbing the ladder or continuously improving or whatever it is. They're just doing one job that they're happy with, and the biggest sources of focus in their life lie outside of work, and that's totally fine. But I think in general, if you're not both, then you ought to change something. The conversation that I had with Claudette was me saying something like this. Most people, if you asked us, would you rather be successful or happy if you had to choose one, would perhaps hesitate to admit it, but we would tend to want to choose success. Mm-hmm. Right. You think you want to make your mark on the world and change everything and make a big deal of yourself. And to most of us, I suspect that kind of comes first. And then we think, well, if I do that, then I will be happy or something. Mm-hmm. But really a more mindful, a more holistic, a more big picture way of looking at things is to think, be happy first. Because really, we're on this planet for only so many years. And some of those years we're going to spend not working. And being happy is really ultimately what we should all be looking for. But we're in a culture that doesn't push us in that direction, mm-hmm. I guess, to put it most simply. I saw a documentary about Leonard Nimoy a couple of nights ago. And he said, when he was in his 80s, he said, you know, I used to major in work and minor in family, and now I major in family and minor in work. And, you know, I think that's another way of looking at work-life integration that makes a certain amount of sense to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Minoring in work and majoring in family, depending on what's important. A number of years ago, I did a lot of executive coaching with really successful people, successful attorneys, doctors, you know, people from most of us look at them and say, these people are really successful. And they would come to me because they were so unhappy in what they were doing. They were really good at it, but they didn't enjoy it. It was too stressful. Maybe they went into it for the wrong reasons. And the work that we did in executive coaching was really helping them figure out, you know, did they want to stay in that field but change what they were doing somehow? Or did they need to leave that field entirely and go do something else, right? So eventually it seems like many of us will get to the point, if we're not happy, that it we'll get desperate to be happy, right? We'll do something to try to move over into being happy and fulfilled in what we're doing professionally.
Right. I mean, not to be morbid about this, but I've been thinking a lot about some of these things, especially because a very good friend of mine passed away this past year. Mm-hmm. But even without that, I think a lot about the hospice nurse. Perhaps some of your listeners have heard or read about this, who made it a habit to ask people who are in their last few weeks of life what their regrets were.
Oh, yeah.
And for men in particular, the biggest regret very often was, I wish I hadn't worked so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And another top regret for everyone was, I wish I had lived a life that was truer to myself and less mm-hmm. what other people wanted of me. And I think that we need to think about all this stuff throughout our careers, because we don't want to wind up with regrets, and we don't want to wind up with people like those that Claudette coached, who say, you know, I'm successful, but I feel very unhappy. I think possibly because of this loss, I kind of hit a period like that myself this year, where I said, you know, I mean, my career seems to be going really well, but there isn't quite enough joy in my life or something. And Wendy and I talked a lot about how to address that. And I wrote a column about that process. It's out there somewhere. But what it came down to for me was making more time for connections with the people in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, by picking up and moving across the country, I severed a lot of connections and needed to remake new ones. And I hadn't been having that happen as quickly as I needed it to happen. So made me think that, you know, every time I have to make a choice between getting some work done or maybe spending some time with a friend or going someplace where I might meet people or things like that, that I should think about what those priorities are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great advice. You know, it's a great way to think, a great perspective, right, on understanding what brings me joy as an individual person and doing more of that. And what you mentioned a few minutes ago about staying, the hospice nurse who interviewed people, and one of the regrets was I didn't live in a way that was true for me. And I think a lot about whether our culture and society right now is, it seems in some ways that it's driving people away from being true to themselves. And then in other ways, there seems to be there's more opportunity, there's more discussion about this concept and idea of being true to ourselves and how important it is. And I was curious what your take was on that, what your perspective was.
Wow, I think that's a really interesting question. I think one of the ways that work-life integration has evolved is that it's allowing people to be more themselves in the context of the workplace and their careers, if that makes any sense to you.
It does.
A good way to gauge that might be to go watch an episode or two of Mad Men and be reminded what the workplace expected of people in terms of sticking to very specific roles. Back in many of our lifetimes. I mean, Mad Men is nostalgic for me because I see, you know, things that I vaguely remember as a small child. But mm-hmm. So I think we do live in a world that allows us to be ourselves more at work. We live in a world where we can choose to expose our own lives, if that's the way to put it, a lot more than was possible even maybe 10 years ago because of social media. That, of course, means that we have to also be in some ways more careful about what we say and do. Social media is a tool that all of us have been learning to use over time because it wasn't really there the same way 20 years ago.
No.
So in some of those ways, we both get the opportunity to be more ourselves. We get to make a lot of decisions about how much we want to share and how much we want to not share. And we also do have to be careful about what we put out there because, you know, it might be out there forever.
Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. We do. And that it seems like, especially with younger people, really emphasizing that, right? Whatever you put on social media will always exist, right? So how we portray ourselves really counts, doesn't it?
How we portray ourselves really counts. Yeah. And so you can get very caught up in presenting the image you want to present, or you can just, you know, let it all hang out and share whatever comes to mind, as some people do, or you can try and find the balance where what you share is genuine and authentic, and yet, you know, you're careful about invading your own privacy and invading other people's privacy, which, you know, as a writer is something I have to think about all the time. But I think in a lot of ways we do live in a world that lets people, at least some, depending on who they are and their choices, right? I mean, the people who would more likely to be coached by you and perhaps listening to this show, we do have a lot of choices about how to live our lives and what to do. And we increasingly live in a world where people are self-employed and contractors and making their own careers, which is not something we've really talked about particularly, but it's another thing that allows people to have more control and be more themselves and make choices about what they want for themselves as opposed to fitting into a corporate structure. But even the corporate structures are changing too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And on that note, we're going to take a break. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you're listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. When we come back, Minda Zetlin, our guest today, and I will be talking more about the shifting landscapes of work and technology. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Leslie Fontaine, and my show is Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com. When we're bogged down with our emotions, the hardships that plague us in our relationships, at work, our finances, we literally can't see the higher plane where we could be operating from. Tune in to Leslie Fontaine, Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready to stop stress, anxiety, and low self-esteem from running your life? Join award-winning author Dr. Friedemann Schaub for Empowerment Radio and learn breakthrough solutions to switch out of survival mode and approach every day with great ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in the first and third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific to Empowerment Radio with host Dr. Friedemann Schaub on Transformation Talk Radio. Visit the fearandanxietysolution.com to learn more.
Tune in to Dynamics of Diversity Radio, scripting the new narrative for immigration with leading experts Kripa Upadhyay and Steve Tanijo on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will remove the noise that often accompanies discussions on this topic and share a new perspective on the dynamics of immigration and diversity, ever reminding us that together we are all at the core of innovation, excellence, and positive change. Visit OrbitLawPLLC.com for upcoming topics.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Would you like to experience life-transforming adventures in personal expansion and world service? If you do, tune in to learn about magical innate abilities that you can develop and use to make your dreams come true. Joy Elaine is author of The Joy Chronicles, and she's inviting you and millions of others to join her in working with galactic masters, angels, and the Ashtar Command as they assist humanity and planet Earth to achieve their ultimate destination of ascension. For more information about this upcoming event and broadcast, visit joyelaine.com. That's joy, ELAINE.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and I'm here today with Minda Zetlin, who, if you're just joining us, is a columnist at Inc.com. And we have been talking about this really interesting concept of the shifting landscapes of technology, work, and business. And we've just talked a lot about how work has been changing, careers are changing, and really the role that technology has played in allowing us partially to make some of those changes for better or worse in how we handle our work. And Minda, I know we wanted to make sure to touch on today a really interesting book that you've written called The Geek Gap, right? Which talks about the culture clash between the worlds of business and technology. Do you mind giving us just a quick overview of that book and how it came about?
Oh, sure. And I was actually one of two authors. The other author was my husband. His name is Bill Flegging. And the book sort of came about very naturally because I was looking around. I'd done books, and I was sort of talking to my agent, looking around for book ideas. And at the same time, right around that same time, I had started writing a lot of stories for Computer World. And it seemed to me like every story that I wrote about IT management came down to business leaders and IT leaders not understanding each other and not communicating clearly and not having the same priorities. Well, at the same time as I was doing this writing for Computer World, Bill, my husband, was working, just to date the book a little bit, was working in a dot-com startup, in the first big wave of dot-com startups. And then as now, there was a big rush to start companies and gather up a lot of users and then try to figure out how to turn a profit. And at what the very, very beginning of what turned out to be the dot-com crash, a lot of people were wondering, you know, how do we monetize this? So one of the ways was, this is how this all began. One of the ways was they were talking about putting live links into chat rooms. So in other words, just to use a stupid example, if you were to type the word car in the course of a chat, and now I hasten to add a public chat, not a private chat, that car would automatically turn into a live link that would take you to Ford or something, and Ford would pay for this. So it was just something being discussed. And he was furious. He thought it was, you know, a horrible invasion of privacy. And I will point out that nothing like this ever did happen. So I think there would have been some user resistance. But, you know, he just thought it was awful. And I was well aware that many companies, including the one he worked for, needed to figure out how to make a profit at some point. Said, well, you know, I mean, this might be, we're talking about a public chat room, right? So there is no privacy exactly. Anyway, we wound up standing in our kitchen yelling at each other at the top of our lungs because he absolutely couldn't see what I was talking about. And I guess I couldn't see what he was talking about. And so it turned into this book that I had been sort of vaguely thinking about writing myself being written by both of us from opposing points of view. And we'd go out and do speaking together where I'd be dressed as a suit and he'd be dressed as a geek. And we would talk about how people who work in technology and people who run businesses have a hard time understanding each other. And that's still true. Although as we've implied, the landscape has shifted in various ways.
And there's something in the book, and I think it was the introduction about this metaphor you use about the elephant in the corner, right? That it's this thing that everyone knows that there's this communication problem, but they don't know what to do about it. So it's the elephant that sits off in the corner.
Nobody talks about it. Right.
Right. Right.
Yes. And
do you think that's still prevalent? Is that still? Yeah.
I think it is, but I think the universe has changed because, as with many things, technology, you know, I mean, I think that one of the lessons of our age is that things don't get managed from the top down as mm-hmm. well as they used to. I think that kind of applies across the board to all sorts of things, and maybe even the presidential election. And mm-hmm. that applies in the world of technology, too. So at the time that we wrote the book, pretty much if you were in your company using technology, that technology would be supplied by a department that did that. And that's becoming less and less true. Mm-hmm. As things get outsourced, things move to the cloud. And as people discover that they have their own access to technology. So like, if you don't like the features and options that your company's email system offers you, then you go out and get a Gmail or Yahoo account or something, just to take a very basic example. People mm-hmm. in the world of technology call this the consumerization of IT. And it's something that they talk about a lot. They also talk about rogue IT or shadow IT, where people in companies go out and get their own technology because they don't like what's being offered or it's not being offered fast enough. So the power structure has shifted a little bit. Another thing that's shifted since I wrote the book with my husband is that technology has become a lot more central to how people do things. So now there's this thing that a lot of people say, every company is a software company. Well, that's up for a lot of debate, but it is true that most companies, especially larger companies, have an understanding that technology is really central to what they do. And if they don't get it right, then their company can't succeed. Mm-hmm. So all of that has changed, but the fundamental idea that people who work in technology come to work in different ways and with different priorities than people who work in business remains true and remains a source of a lot of misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think, you know, you're really interesting point about how every company is kind of a software company now, because technology is so central to everything that we're doing, right? Makes it, as opposed to being something specialized over off to one side, we have people who still specialize in aspects of technology and the rest of us, right, who are consuming it on a regular basis, you know, either personally or professionally. When you said there's still, what are some of the common, if we can distill it down to this, what are some of the common examples of a communication or a culture clash in technology and business between the suits and the geeks?
Yeah, between the suits and the geeks.
Yeah.
Very often, with all, as with everything else, mm-hmm. technology is a matter of resources, limited resources, and balancing different priorities. So one of the culture clashes that seems to come up a lot, or at least it's come up in organizations I've worked with, is the whole question around security and risk. And that's something that we all talk about a lot. But technology people who like what they're doing or want to protect the status quo and honestly want to protect their organizations will often focus on risk as something that people in leadership positions don't worry about enough. So yes, you can do this new thing, but there may be security issues. Sometimes those security issues are real and something that you need to worry about and prepare for, as we've all seen the many news stories about the gigantic data breaches and that we've all been subjected to, including, I guess, the Democratic Party.
Right.
But at the same time, that can often become sort of a knee-jerk reason to not try something new. So if your competitors give customers complete insight into, let's say, their orders and where everything is and when to expect anything or any problems that are coming up, if they have access to all of that through your website because you've made some of your internal information available on the website, that can be a competitive advantage. It could also cause a security risk. And so you have to find that balance because, you know, you can't have a security risk that's unacceptable. At the same time, you can't let your technology fall behind the competition because that's going to hurt you in a whole other way. So that's a sort of quick off the top of my head example of how these things can break down. Mm-hmm. When you run into trouble, when you have IT leaders who just kind of put up a wall in their head and say, okay, we can't ever have any kind of security risk whatsoever. Therefore, we have to be in control of everything. I think, you know, there might have been a time when that worked, but that doesn't really work anymore. You know, on the other hand, you can't have people saying, well, we're just going to try every new technology that comes along and not worry about what the risks may be attached to that. I mean, there are some people in some industries where you're not dealing with that much sensitive information and things move very, very, very fast, such as perhaps mm-hmm. advertising, where you do take that approach. Mm-hmm. You know, on the other hand, if you're in healthcare, it's a whole different matter.
Yeah. And it seems like you're saying it's a case by case or industry by industry, right? Scenario, but
case by case, right.
But some of the complexity around the communication, given all the nuances of, you know, security, right? Risk, right? How do we manage risk? And all these things that maybe 10 years ago were important, but perhaps not quite as critical as they are now.
And there are other things happening. Yeah, I actually had a CIO say to me recently that he was worrying less about risk. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he said that data breaches, because of the way things are structured, data breaches, are, if you have one, or cannot necessarily be as catastrophic as might have been the case some years ago. But the other thing that's playing into it is we all talk about disruption, right? Mm-hmm. The hotel industry and Airbnb, the taxi industry and Uber. And those are perhaps not necessarily the best examples, although they're the quickest to come to mind.
Oh, yeah.
Of the
good ones.
Video industry, Netflix, whatever.
Yeah.
But one of the things one of the things that allows small startups to disrupt large established companies and large established industries is the fact that they move faster with technology because they are more willing to take some risks. So increasingly, large organizations that have traditionally been and remain very risk averse are seeing the risk in being risk averse, if I can put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a risk in being risk averse because some of these really quick, nimble, tech savvy companies can come in and disrupt, right? These really, really large organizations. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this really interesting conversation about disruption and also segue into talking about some of the shifting landscape in business right now, especially given the year, interesting and unprecedented, as they're saying, year we're starting here with 2017. Before we take a break, Minda, would you like to share your contact info just one more time for our listeners?
Sure, I'd love to. Yeah. So you can, the easiest way to find me probably is to go to my website, which is www.mindazetlin.com. And Minda Zetlin is MindaZetlin. And if you go there, if you look, there's like a little menu bar. I mean, that'll take you to my blog about marriage and moving to the Pacific Northwest, which is, I think, is fun. But besides that, there's a menu bar on the left, and that'll take you to an about page on me, and you can find a link to my Ink columns and my contact info and everything else.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So this is Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about the shifting landscape of business. Stay tuned.
What is a brilliant culture? And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
Artie Hoffman is the hottest psychic with the warmest heart and the host of the hit show Angels and Answers. A renowned psychic medium, spiritual life coach, and an entertaining motivational speaker, Artie has helped over 15,000 people with his amazing intuitive gifts, his passion, and his humor. Call 877-ANGEL-02 to schedule a personal reading or to have your own psychic Artie party. That's 877-ANGEL-02. And visit ArtieHoffman.com and Angels and Answers on Facebook.
The Earth is an ever-changing being. Goddess Light shamanic healer Bree Gibbs guides us through the ascending worlds and brings forth knowledge and truth. As a light creator, she is here to provide new information needed at this time in our evolution. Join Bree as she shares messages from guides, spirits, ascended masters, goddesses, and others. Tune in Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific for the Silver Gaia Show and live the authentic life.
Be unstoppable. Who do executive women count on for up-to-date information on everything from stilettos to being heard in the boardroom? To achieve excellence, you must first take control of your life and develop a successful strategy with the Unstoppable Diva. Tune in to Up or Out with Connie Fife, Mondays 5 p.m. Eastern, as she cuts through the BS to guide you to become bold, connected, and unstoppable. For more information, visit uporout.com.
Beyond being this amazing neurologist, inventor, author, Dr. Dan Cohen has been called to look at technology and look at personal and spiritual development and merge these together. As technology uses the healing and psycho-spiritual effects of synchronized sounds, vibrations, electromagnetic fields, and how that interacts with us in our nervous system in what we're calling the Soltech chair.
The Soltech Lounge induces profound levels of relaxation that transition over time into deep meditative states. The synchronized sound, vibration, and magnetic field induce these states. The subject doesn't have to work at it.
To learn more, go to soltechwellbeing.com. That's S-O-L-T-E-C, wellbeing.
On Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and I'm here with Minda Zetlin, columnist at Inc.com. And we have been having a really interesting show for those of you who are just joining us, talking about how the landscapes of technology, work, and business have really been shifting, especially over the last year or two. And we are going to now talk more about how the landscape of business has been shifting, and really look at some upcoming, what are some of the upcoming business trends, some things we're seeing or concerned about or excited about in 2017? What's been on your radar, Minda?
A bunch of different things. One thing that I have to point out, being in the state of Washington, mm-hmm. and that we've seen coming up, and some of the things that I'm seeing are more long-term trends that may or may not be specifically affected by the specific presidency we have, and others, mm-hmm. others obviously will be. Through all this debate about the minimum wage, which hasn't gone up from, I think, $7.25 at the federal level in 8 years, something like that, 40 different states and municipalities, I think 19 states and 21 municipalities, have been raising the minimum wage, and mm-hmm. Washington, I say Washington because Washington's one of the two states with a minimum wage of $11 an hour now, mm-hmm. as of day before yesterday. And so and that came about through something that we thought, probably many of us thought, had kind of died out, which is organized labor. So or labor, people organizing, people in low paid restaurant professions in particular, mm-hmm. organizing. So that's just one thing that's on my radar. And again, it might be another example of how top-down leadership doesn't work the way it mm-hmm. used to, and mm-hmm. kind of command and control leadership doesn't seem to work the way it used to. One trend that's that's big, that is much more, as I say, much more global than, you know, who's in the White House at any specific time, is something that I kind of mentioned in passing before, which is that we're seeing more and more people independent, entrepreneurial, in charge of their own lives, in charge of their own careers, and working as contractors as opposed to employees. That has obvious advantages for businesses. It can have advantages for employees also if they're prepared to be entrepreneurial and take charge of their own careers and not just try to operate within a corporate environment and climb the ladder, which of course, you know, still exists very much too. Some futurists think that there's going to be more and more of that. Related to that is the sharing economy. Things like Uber and in particular Lyft and Airbnb and, you know, also things like Zipcar and stuff like that take advantage of the fact that so many of the things that we all have remain in large part unused. Airbnb takes note of the fact that many of us have guest rooms that are empty, you know, like 300 nights out of the year. Our cars may sit in our driveway most of the time. Well, maybe we don't need a car. Maybe we just need a Zipcar membership. That kind of stuff, that sharing economy stuff is just getting going. I just read about a company called ThreadUp that where you can send all the old clothes in your closet in. And it's a gigantic online thrift store. And you don't have to take them to the thrift store. They'll send you a prepaid package and you can just send your clothes back. There's so much of that kind of stuff. There's so much unused things that we all have that we could share or that we could rent instead of own. And younger people in particular are very oriented towards doing that and owning less. So that's, I think, something that we're going to see happening with or without, you know, whoever's in the White House. Trump himself, Wall Street seems to think that he's good for the economy, or at least good for Wall Street, because the stock market reacted very briefly, but has been pretty positive since he was elected. If you're, I think, clearly green energy kinds of businesses may be in trouble. Although, you know, one thing about Trump is that he doesn't necessarily do what people expect. And he put Elon Musk, whose big priority is climate change, onto his board of advisors now, whether for during the transition now, whether, you know, an advisor is just an advisor, you're not obligated to listen to anything he actually says. But it's interesting. Trump has said he's keeping an open mind on climate change, which, of course, is the most anybody and even people who are against, you know, climate change legislation or whatever. That's what they say. Let's keep an open mind. Let's have more debate because, you know, we don't know for sure that climate change is real. I mean, that's what they say. I want to stress that that's not necessarily my position. But for sure, the fossil fuel energy industries probably benefit under President Trump. Healthcare is a really interesting question, right? The Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, is deeply unpopular, right? But it's also insured 20 million people or more who weren't insured before. And a lot of the principles in it are really popular, such as you can't be turned down for insurance by having a pre-existing condition. You know, I thought about that a lot when we were looking at moving, because New York State does have that requirement for insurance companies in that state, but a lot of states did not until the Affordable Care Act. And I was somewhat hesitant to move to a state where you could be denied for a pre-existing condition because, you know, you never know. You might need health insurance and have had cancer the year before or something. I mean, that's not happened to either me or my husband, but you never know. So Trump ran by saying not we will repeal the Affordable Care Act, which, you know, Republicans have been saying almost, you know, way before it was even passed.
Right.
But we will replace it with something better. And if he sticks to that, then it will be really interesting to see what the something better might be. Based on his choice for Health Human Services Secretary, we can probably assume that the something better will be very beneficial to doctors because Tom Price is a doctor, But beyond that, so it's tough to know what's going to happen with healthcare. As an industry, it's probably always going to be powerful and growing just because of the aging of the population, which is another big trend that we need to be aware of.
So there's a lot. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, even in as we're wrapping up here, what you've been able to share with us, right? We see the gig-related economy, right? People being more entrepreneurial, that good old-fashioned organizing, grassroots organizing helped pass, increase the minimum wage, which also happened in Massachusetts, where I am. And then we have the sharing economy, and then what's going to happen under President-elect Trump, right? So it's an interesting time, isn't it? It's a very interesting time.
Right. Yeah. There's a curse out there. May you live in interesting times. But interesting times don't necessarily have to be bad.
They don't. And Minda, I want to thank you today for being with us as our guest and for sharing such great information. And thank you all for tuning into Cultural Brilliance Radio. Stay tuned and look forward to seeing you next time.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.